Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Monday, June 16th, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we've got a packed show for you today. Firstly, we're going to discuss how Emirati billionaire Khalaf Al-Habtour has called for peace between Iran and Israel. And secondly, a podcast-born media company, Thamania, wins Saudi football streaming rights. This is something completely new that has never happened before. And we're going to discuss how, following a backlash, Modric's deal with Israeli firm Skillset has completely disappeared from the web and even on his Instagram. And finally, Egypt is postponing the Grand Egyptian Museum worth $1 billion opening amid the tension that is now going on in the region.
And before we go and jump into the first story, markets are really bad. They're red. Bitcoin is dipping, everything is dipping, and we're going to tell you what's the reason, and we're going to do a summary of today's day four after the uncalled for, unprovoked, illegal attacks by Israel. So this is the first story that Emirati billionaire Khalaf Al-Habtour has very clearly said that, and it's an emotional appeal for peace amid escalating hostilities between Iran and Israel. And he exactly said, with all, he wrote it in Arabic, we translated it, so I hope we have the whole context, but he said, with all sincerity and love, I raise a call from my heart to the leaders and people of Iran and Israel to stop the language of war and replace it with the language of reason, compassion, and humanity. And this was a public statement by him on social media. He urged Iran to focus on its youth and economy and called on Israel to embrace Palestinians as humans with dignity and rights.
Now, his statement comes as an open conflict initiated, unprovoked and unjustified by Israel against Iran enters its fourth day, stoking fears of a broader war in the oil-rich region. Now, Iran has launched multiple waves of drones and missiles in retaliation after Israel launched the illegal attacks targeting Tehran, the capital of Iran.
And so far, at least 224 people have been killed in Iran, most of them civilians, according to local reports coming out of Iran. Israeli strikes have taken out senior members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Meanwhile, Iranian attacks have killed 14 Israelis and injured around 400. And this is according to the government sources coming out of Israel.
Now, this is the most serious military exchange between the two arch rivals in decades. Israel says its strikes are meant to neutralize Iran's nuclear capabilities. Iran, for its part, appears constrained in its response and is reportedly rethinking further cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog.
And U.S. President Donald Trump, he also jumped in and has claimed that a peace deal between Iran and Israel is possible. Posting on Truth Social, he said, "We will have peace soon between Israel and Iran." However, in the same breath, he added, "Sometimes they have to fight it out." Weird.
And as tensions rise, investors are watching closely. J.P. Morgan has said that oil prices could spike to $130 a barrel. Iran currently produces 3.3 million barrels per day, around 3.5% of global supply. Now, any disruption, especially through the Strait of Hormuz, could severely impact global markets.
And such a spike in oil could double U.S. inflation to 5% and delay interest rate cuts. Equities in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Qatar, Kuwait, all of the markets which were open on Sunday, all of them were in red. Today, DFM and ADX have opened and they are also going to be in red. Meanwhile, funny thing is that Israeli defense stocks are rising, which is weird because they're attacking another country illegally, unprovoked, uncalled for, completely baseless reasons to attack. And all through this, Brent crude briefly surged 5.5% in Asian trading earlier today on Monday. So it's very weird that oil is going up, markets are going down, but Israeli defense, all the companies that are listed, they're going up.
And global leaders, including Germany and Russia's President Vladimir Putin, are urging de-escalation, but with Israel promising more strikes and Iran under pressure to respond, the region remains on the brink. As Khalaf al-Habtour has warned, there is no security without justice and no future without acknowledgement of the other.
It's a very nice philosophy that he's put forward. But security without justice is impossible, and you have to acknowledge the other. And it's a very nice idea that we've seen throughout. Like, I think it's been like a century at least where us and them, the concept which was coined by Edward Said, I think I read one of his books, Orientalism and Occidentalism, where he says that the West thinks this of Oriental East, and Oriental East thinks this of West. He made a very nice comparison how we treat them as them, they, aliens, which are not like copying our culture, doing the things.
Look, but to be honest with you,
it's a very nice philosophy that we should accept them.
I think it's a great philosophy.
Least, yeah.
I think it's a great philosophy, but why would you think that someone like Emirati billionaire Khalaf al-Habtour, one of the oldest, richest men in the UAE, would come and say something like this? I think it does speak to how many of these businessmen fear that their operations will be affected. We saw how he recently he came and he announced how he wants to lead a delegation in Syria to pursue further investments there while he is pulling out of Lebanon. But now what are we seeing now? Emirates Airlines have canceled flights in Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, Iran, and Syria, and that is because of what is going on here. Just as he has recently announced that he wants to enter into Syria.
Yeah.
So while I think that his call for peace, it's beautiful. It's utopic. I think it's utopic, and a lot of these businessmen do have fear associated with what is going on.
Yeah, the main thing is that whenever there is a threat to the economy, not Middle Eastern economy, overall the global economy, every businessman calls for peace, and it's like the first thing, because no one wants the markets bad, no one wants the oil price to go up, no one wants anything bad happening to the economic landscape. Middle East is booming right now, and figures like Khalaf al-Habtour, they're benefiting from it because they're the original, I always call them the original billionaires and original founders of this area, especially UAE, and then we have people like Al-Waleed bin Talal in Saudi Arabia. Qatar has mostly the royal family there, not big names, but their prime minister, their emir of Qatar, forgot the complete name, but Al Thani is the family name. All of these people.
Emir Tamim?
Yeah.
I believe Tamim.
Yeah, Tamim Al Thani, yeah. So these people, they don't want anything bad to happen in the world because everything eventually affects the markets. Everything eventually affects the
trade happening. I mean, imagine, this is right beside them.
Yeah,
this is right beside them.
And this is, it is being called a Middle Eastern conflict because it's Iran, on some context, on some maps, on some magnitude, they're considered a part of Middle East. But yeah, that's the problem. And Israel is a part of Middle East, we all know. So it is a Middle Eastern problem. It is a Middle Eastern conflict. I hope it resolves as soon as possible. And as Trump said, that there is a peace solution, but he's like, they're like kids and they have to fight it out. Sometimes when he says stuff, I always take it with a pinch of salt, because I think he is a very good stand-up comedian. The way he speaks, the way he says things, he takes them so lightly. It's a conflict, it's a big war that can eventually happen. And he's like, they sometimes just have to fight it out. No,
sometimes
just
you need,
do something.
Sometimes you need comedy. And I think what's so crazy is you have media companies that are producing like comedic shows, comedic podcasts, and they're now in charge of Saudi football streaming.
Yeah.
So in this like major shakeup in the Middle East sports podcasting, Tamania, a digital-first media company that began as a podcast studio, has secured the exclusive MENA broadcast rights for Saudi Arabia's top football competitions. This includes the Saudi Pro League, known as their Ocean League, the King's Cup, the Super Cup, and the First Division League.
and a deal which runs from 2025 to 2026 season, the upcoming season, through to 2030-31 season, marks the first time a non-traditional broadcaster has taken the lead in football coverage across the region. Tamania will launch a new satellite TV channel alongside a digital platform featuring freemium and paid subscription tiers. Fans will be able to access replays, highlights, and exclusive behind-the-scenes content.
So this move follows Tamania's recent expansion into entertainment. So the company launched its comedy vertical Exit 8 and acquired Riyadh-based Comedy Pod, aiming to blend sports, culture, and commentary tailored for Gen Z and millennial audiences.
And Tamania is majority owned by Saudi Research and Media Group, or SRMG, which acquired a 51% stake in the company in 2021 for 33.3 million riyals, around $8.9 million, and SRMG's portfolio includes major regional outlets like Arab News, Ashark Al Osset, and Ashark Business, which is a JV with Bloomberg.
So until now, Saudi domestic football rights were held by SSC and NBC. Globally, matches aired on platforms like PIF-owned DAZN, Fox, Tencent, and Canal Plus and Polsat. Now, international media group IMG will, however, continue producing the high-quality global feed for the matches, meaning that, you know, they're the ones that are in charge of the streaming, and they can sell it to other people. But I think that this is completely mind-boggling news. Yeah. You are telling me that a media company that is podcast-born, that is there for podcasts, yeah. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that they host the Solif Business Show.
Yeah.
I believe that
they
it's
have
one
a lot of shows
under their
on,
portfolio.
Yeah.
But it's crazy yeah. that they give them the streaming rights yeah. for Saudi Arabia's biggest football tournaments.
My first, the first time I realized there's something called Tamania, I remember Rana was there, and she did a story about one of the podcast episodes. It's in Arabic. It's with the guy, bearded, I think, some Arab
guy. I know who you're talking about.
Completely forgot the name. But yeah, so that episode was the most watched podcast episode globally. It created a world record. And I remember she did the story. I was like, what is Tamania? And I went and I was like, okay, this is a whole podcast thing where they have so many shows. They launched kids shows. So imagine they're targeting literally every demographic, kids, parents, young adults like us who want to watch comedy or listen to something else. So it's a very nice, well-rounded thing. Interesting that they've been given the Saudi Football League rights, Russian Saudi Pro League rights, the King's Cup, which is the biggest cup, a domestic tournament. So all these things, I think, we read that one comment on LinkedIn. It was a very nice summary that they're the new guys. They understand the new audiences. So what they will do will maybe set the trend for future broadcasting for a lot of football leagues, not only the Saudi Pro League. Most probably whatever they do may set a precedent for other big European leagues.
I remembered the podcast, by the way. It's called Finjan.
Oh, yeah,
Finjan. It's called Finjan, and I remember the episode so distinctly because it went trending on TikTok, and there were cuts of it, and it was about how to have a successful relationship, I think.
Yeah.
It had so many cuts on TikTok that I see until right now, by the way, even on Instagram Reels. So, yeah, and it got 100 million views.
Yeah. It was a world record. So, yeah, very nice to see that these small setups, which started as podcast studios, are growing. We recently did a whole partnership with Katara Studios from Qatar. They have launched a series about Arab cinema, a podcast. Second episode is out, I think. So all these players, all these people in the Arab region, I remember the Hussein Fakhri, right? He's the CCO of Katara Studios. And I remember he said a very interesting thing, that this is the Squid Games moment for Arab cinema right now and Arab media as a whole, whatever you say, podcast, whatever. It is the time for them to shine. It is the time for them to become global stars like Squid Games.
But I think, you know what stood out to me that Fakhri said? It's the fact that the West, comparatively to the Middle East, they spend more on their marketing budgets.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is...
It's a one-to-one ratio.
Yeah, what they'll basically do is the production budget for a film, I don't know, like Barbie, they're going to use half of that production budget, like $50 million, into actually marketing the film. Whereas in the Middle East, they're only going to use 10 to 15%. Right. 10% actually, that's like if we're lucky to actually market things. So I think that's why it is a very smart move for all of these big Saudi tournaments to actually partner with a podcast-born platform.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they understand millennials and Gen Z better and they understand the fact that they're all social media users better, these games will be better marketed and hopefully will have new audiences.
Most probably domestically it will still be with Tamania, but I think internationally they will have to go with Dazn. Dazn is not PIF owned. PIF just invested $1 billion in them. They're a British company. Dazn is like a global sports streaming giant, to be honest, right now. They're like Todd TV. Remember, we did the Todd interview. Todd, I remember the VC, vice president came. He told us, he was on the show, he told us very interesting thing that live sports is their way to bring people onto the platform, and then they have entertainment content, they have local content and all that to keep them there. So likewise, Dazn is completely sports. And I remember Saudi PIF through their company, I remember the name quickly, the sports investment firm, Surge Sports Investment. They invested nearly $1 billion. Officially, they never said they invested $1 billion, but a lot of publications, and Bloomberg broke the story, that $1 billion were invested. And there's a very strange, weird theory behind it. Because recently, we saw the Club World Cup is happening, and Saudi PIF became a partner to that Club World Cup because a lot of people were not interested in Club World Cup because they don't have big stars. Messi is the biggest star in it right now. They played a nil and draw, by the way, with Al Ahly Egypt. The funny thing is that it's you look at the web, PIF invests $1 billion in Dazn. Dazn gets the streaming rights for $1 billion. And then PIF is the partner of the Club World Cup. And it looks like a deal where PIF actually invested into Dazn so they can buy the Club World Cup rights and somehow give the Club World Cup that authenticity. Because reportedly, a lot of people were not interested in streaming it. No one was ready to buy the rights to stream it. And Dazn came in and they paid above market price of $1 billion.
Really, you just made a really good point, by the way. And I think this is why Temenya is going to do so well.
Yeah.
I just realized something. I didn't add this in, but Temenya basically means the number 8.
Yeah.
You can say Temenya or you can say Temenya. It depends on your Arabic dialect. But you made a really good point, Majid, because of the fact that what Temenya is going to do is not only are they going to have a premium exclusive subscription that you can actually obtain to watch the games with better quality, but they're also going to have new TV cable channels. Yeah. So I think what I love about this is they're recognizing that not everybody will invest in the subscription. So they've provided an option for most average people, but they have also provided a premium option for people who want better quality. And I think that diversified approach is what works really well here.
Yeah. And talking about football, the next story is very interesting. And Wood did a lot of work on it, so she deserves the credit for doing this story, first of all. But Croatian football star Luka Modric came under fire after his recent partnership with Skillset. Now, Skillset is a digital football training app co-founded by two Israeli entrepreneurs. This whole scenario sparked a lot of online outrage. So the controversy came amid ongoing tensions related to Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. We all know about that. With users highlighting Modric's own background as a child refugee during the Croatian War of Independence.
So basically, the story is here is that Skillset was co-founded by Aydin Verit and Noam Hachman. So basically, there were these images that were shared by sports journalist Leila Hamid on X, showing Verit posing with Israeli soldiers and describing the moment as great and exciting. Now, there was another image that was also shared by Hamid, which basically shows the other co-founder, Hachman, beside a military aircraft holding a flag reading Israel is alive. And the aircraft itself also has the symbol of Israel on it. So the images quickly circulated across X, prompting criticism of skill set and all of its really famous ambassadors.
And in the wake of the backlash, Skillset's official website has gone offline.
It's still offline, by the way. I checked today.
And the startup's Instagram page has been wiped clean. The profile picture is gone. All posts are gone. Even they did a collab post with Modric. It was a promotional post for the app, and that has also disappeared from all the social media accounts.
So Skillset has actually previously also secured endorsement deals with high-profile players, including Barca's Pedri and the beloved Liverpool defender Virgil. But the backlash has intensified with online petitions, you know, calling for a FIFA ban on Israeli participation. This has been going on for a while. And, you know, this entire situation has reignited this debate over, you know, sports, politics, and public figures' responsibilities.
And despite the criticism, Israeli tech continues to attract global funding. This is the weird part. Since the conflict escalated on October 7, Israeli startups have raised nearly $9 billion, according to the Israel Innovation Authority, making it the world's third largest tech hub after Silicon Valley and New York. And Skillset itself raised $3.1 million, including a $1.7 million seed round in 2023. So what basically Skillset is that you go and you buy a course and see some great legend teaching you how to be a goalkeeper, how to be a forward, how to make runs, how to do the tricks. It was a nice concept, but as soon as the news came out that the founders are a supporter of the IDF, which is the main party which is carrying out the genocide in Gaza, there has been a big backlash because a lot of players that are involved are stars. Virgil van Dijk, everyone knows, is a star. The best defender Liverpool had in the last four or five years.
And it's crazy because it's like you have the best clubs. You have players from the best clubs there. Real Madrid, you have Barca, you have Liverpool. And I think, you know, with this entire story, the story here is that basically because Modric partnered with Skillset and, you know, everyone noticed it and went after the story that it was co-founded by these Israelis, they did not actually delete the account. They took down every single post, and they basically, you know, when you just remove your profile photo and it's gray, and what they're doing here is they're basically using this strategy of going dark. That's what they're doing. They're going dark.
They want people calm down and
exactly,
they can come back.
They want people to forget about them. They don't want people to associate that branding with the backlash. Yeah. Give them like 6 months. They're definitely going to come back. But I think for me, what was so surprising, Majid, is even after everything that has happened, you know, in Palestine, you have Israeli tech sector raising over $9 billion. Yeah. The number is close to $10 billion. And I think we've also seen this in how very recently Alphabet, the parent company of Google, acquired Israeli cybersecurity company Wiz in a $32 billion all-cash deal.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how their spyware companies are doing really well. But, you know, more so for me in this story is, there was that confusion of, do these founders support genocide?
Yeah.
Do they support genocide? Because if so, these players deserve this backlash that they're receiving. But in the end of the day, the way that I honestly think about it is when you think about what's going on with Palestine and Israel, I think that here there is only one victim and there is only one country. I was watching this podcast with, Piers Morgan, Majid, and it was with this IDF member, and it was with Bassem.
Yeah.
And
I remember.
I found that entire like debacle just so interesting because, you know, you have Bassem saying, "Oh, you guys want back 50 hostages from Hamas," and then I just made that link of, I was like, wait, because the, you know, Gaza health authorities have reported that over 50,000 lives have been lost, probably more on reported numbers. But the point is that you're telling me over 50 hostages that are probably well and alive, you are going to take over 50,000 lives. So I think even if these founders did not say everything that Leila Hamid allegedly said that they said, in the end of the day, supporting Israel and in its right to exist is supporting what is going on.
Yeah. The problem is very simple. As Piers Morgan also, like, finally on his show said that saying anything against Israel is not saying anything against Jews. And he's like, I've been the best supporter. Everyone knows that I was the first one, first biggest supporter, first big voice on media that was the biggest supporter for their right to exist. But as soon as I started asking them questions about how many civilians have been killed as collateral damage and everything, he's like, I was also called anti-Jew, anti-Semitic and all that. So the problem is not who is anti-Semitic or not. The simple problem is they're killing people, they're killing civilians in Palestine. If there's 50 hostages, they've already killed 50,000 Palestinians in Gaza, and they're pushing them to the brink of extinction just for 50 people. And we've seen very clearly all the hostages that were released by Hamas when there was a truce period in between. All the hostages came out happy, healthy. The three yeah. women, I remember the video, all of them were happy, smiling and healthy. And when you look at the other side of the story, the hostages that are kept by IDF in Israel, you look at their conditions, you clearly see the difference. It's very visible now. And I remember Basim was the very interesting thing. He actually, Basim was very cool and calm in the start. But now when you see him on podcast, he's actually looking frustrated because he is like, how much more do you want me to tell you that this is wrong? This is a genocide happening. And he became frustrated because there was an Israeli guy trying to defend their position. And he was like, yeah, okay, Hamas killed two people, and then you went on and killed 2,000 people. So who's the aggressor here? And he's like, I still say Hamas is wrong, killing is wrong.
But
just
I think, you know,
finish it, close the chapter.
You know,
that's
what,
his stance, and that is everyone's stance, I think.
I think with this entire story, Majid, the most disappointing part about all of it is the fact that because there is so much there's so much ethnic cleansing here and so much killing, it has actually taken away from the conversation of, in fact, they did not buy this land fairly and squarely as you would do in a real estate deal. They were not even given the permission to buy this land. They just took it. As if it was their rightful land. And I think for me, that's what saddens me the most, is that the conversation has reached the point of all that is discussed. Yeah. And it is necessary to discuss it, is stop killing people. But in fact, it is their land. It's theirs. Yeah. It belongs to them.
Yeah. And moving on from that, final thing, which has been caused by the ongoing conflict, day four of Iran-Israel. Actually, I wouldn't call it a conflict. It's again an unprovoked attack by Israel on another country. And they're doing that in Yemen also. So imagine they're literally everywhere. They're just going and bombing people. Right now, it's like a rabid dog who doesn't know what to do and where to do it. But right now, Egypt has delayed the highly anticipated inauguration of the Grand Egyptian Museum, the world's largest archaeological museum, citing ongoing regional instability. We know what the instability is. The $1 billion landmark project located near the Giza pyramids was originally set to open on July 3, like in 16-17 days. Officials have now confirmed that the event will take place in the fourth quarter of 2025, that is like the last 3 months, though no new date has been confirmed.
So the decision follows the tensions in the region, particularly after Israel's recent attack on Iran, as Majid has mentioned, which has escalated into a multi-day conflict. So Egypt's Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities said the postponement was made in light of quote-unquote current regional developments and the need to ensure international participation at the highest levels.
And the museum, located just 1 mile from the iconic Giza Plateau, is central to Egypt's strategy to double annual tourist numbers to 30 million within the next decade, with expectations to draw 5 million visitors a year. The GEM was designed to redefine Egypt's global cultural footprint.
So the delay also impacts the phased rollout of upgraded Giza experience managed by Orescom Pyramids Entertainment, led by Egyptian billionaire Naguib Sawiris. So the $30 million revamp includes hop-on, hop-off buses, luxury dining, and a new car-free visitor network. Now, efforts are also underway to regulate local vendors and improve safety and accessibility across the site.
And despite a 24% increase in tourism this April, officials remain cautious. A soft launch of the new Giza experience continues, and a revised opening date for the Grand Egyptian Museum will depend on regional stability and international travel sentiment. Very interesting story. It's just an update that it's not opening now.
By the way, it's already opened, Majid.
The Grand Egyptian Museum?
It's already opened.
No, it's open. Soft launch is there.
Of course.
But yeah, the official launch, like the ceremony and fireworks.
They need the celebrities, the influencers to come. I think that's really necessary.
So if you go there, I think you can visit it. But obviously, they want to do something big because it's, again, it's a revamped. The Grand Egyptian Museum is still there. She's right. The mummies and all that stuff is there. The revamp part is, I think, an extension, a little bit of an extension where they have new artifacts. So I think that's still closed. But yeah, Egyptian Museum is open. Rich went there. I remember he told me the whole story of everything. But he actually went there. So it's open. But the extended part, the newer parts, the renovated parts, they'll soon open once all this subsides and Q4 comes.
I understand their hesitation because when it comes to these like really big events, obviously you have sponsors, you have people that you've invited, you have people that you've paid to come. So it would be all a waste if they did not postpone it till later on in the year in December.
And there's like so many flight disruptions at the moment that I think half of them won't be able to come or they'll be late. Because I remember I was looking at my wife is traveling actually this Thursday or Friday, and I was looking at the map and she's just going to Saudi Arabia. She's not going far away. Even then I was like, what's the flight path? Is it going over anything? What will happen? Will they divert it? And eventually she's going to the UK, and I was looking at the path and I was like, okay, this is across the Middle East, and if this problem doesn't subside, her 7 or 8 hour flight would become longer. So everyone is right now looking at the maps and everything, that what will happen, how long the flight will be, where will it be rerouted. So thankfully the UAE, I saw that they're very updated. The website is very updated. Emirates, Etihad, all Saudi Arabians also. Everyone is updating everyone as things are developing.
But I think with this story, you know what it also is? I almost feel bad for Egypt because I feel that because of their geographic positioning, they're obviously very near to Palestine. A lot of their operations get affected more than you guys
know. They share a border with Palestine.
Exactly. And I think we see that especially with the Suez Canal. Yeah. I mean, for me, what was insane was, you know, reading that in 2023, to be exact, the Suez Canal made profits over $10 billion. Yeah. Come 2024, profits dropped to around $3.4 billion. That is almost a $7 billion loss. And it was specifically because of the fact that Houthis were attacking the area and affecting operations because they stand with the people of Palestine. So I think with Egypt, it is a shame that their operations and, you know, their big openings keep being impacted by those things. And perhaps, maybe, Majid, that maybe does play into the reason of why Egypt is not getting, you know, more than 3 million foreigners that are visiting it per year, probably, despite the fact that it has so much potential. Not even potential.
Just everything one of the oldest civilizations, right?
Exactly, and everything is there.
Yeah. All the people we have. The good thing about UAE is you have a person from every country, and you talk to the Egyptians. To be honest, like Pakistan, if I love Pakistan, I love Pakistan's weather and everything. I just don't like the systems there, right? So likewise, Egyptians love the country. It's so beautiful. They have everything. I think they're one of the oldest countries in the region which had trade and everything. And they could be one of the biggest giants in the industry. Imagine, they're like right next to Saudi, UAE, Oman, Qatar, all these countries which are so nicely well-placed. They're not having money problems, and Egypt is facing money problems. So either one is corruption, that's very well known. But the second thing is, they haven't been able to live up to that potential. And that is the most frustrating part for Egyptians, the people that you talk to, the Egyptians in the UAE. And also, anyone who visits there, like, they could have made everything so nice. Like UAE, you go to any mall or park,
everything
is so systematic, right?
They have made a lot of things nice, but definitely more progress to go there. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners. Please share it so we can go 2 million and I can say a bigger shout out to our 2 million monthly listeners. But if you love the platform, if you love what we are doing, if you have any feedback, we're always there to listen to you. Thank you so much for making this possible. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on Tuesday.